Recording.
Okay, so it looks like we are recording. I'm also going to have a separate copy of it up and ready to go. So, welcome to the first teleclass of Q2. We're going to be covering effective meetings. Let's just do a quick roll call, please.
Randy,
Eric, Ramon, Peter, Jeremy, Jeff, Vance.
And Vance, closing it out. Appreciate that. Just a quick reminder, Jeremy New, so teleclass etiquette, bring your binder if you can to the teleclass unless you're on your way in. No multitasking to the extent possible. Minimize background noise if you're going to be in a noisy area. You guys are all in a room, but I'm still struggling sometimes to discern who's talking when, so if you wouldn't mind saying who it is when you make a comment, that'd be helpful for me. Stay on subject, avoid tangents to the extent you can. Sometimes tangents are required as setup, so I get that. All these calls are confidential, and then after the task, or after this class, if you want to post a takeaway on the e-journal, it's a quick way to get a post in for the week. So, and then we're going to try to go dinner table conversation, so not too much of a hub and spoke system. With that, let's jump into wins. Any wins you guys have had? So we've had 2 weeks now, right, since the last sort of all-day session for advanced execution. We went over a lot of material. Wins you guys can speak of for the last couple weeks?
Yeah, this is Peter. I actually posted on the e-journal, but I feel that I had a win last week in being able to recalibrate and shift from not necessarily the drama triangle, but a situation where I probably could have fallen into the drama triangle, but I became more conscious of the situation. Basically, you know, something I've been dealing with is poor performance with our wholesale vehicles. And what I had been doing was really pointing to other people as to what they could do to help, but I wasn't really focusing in on what I could do to correct the problem. And last week, I really just took a different approach and approached the general manager at the auction that we attend, got his assistance in getting out some better run numbers. I took the action to actually go to the auction yesterday. I was very aggressive in selling our trades, really wanted to, my focus going in was to sell a high percentage and really just reestablish ourselves as a top seller at the auction. And I think that making that shift really is going to help us get back to reaching our target, whereas in previous weeks when I was just pointing at other people and what they needed to change, nothing was happening and actually performance was regressing. So once I actually focused on what it is that I needed to accomplish, I feel like now we're in a position as a team to where we can really be more effective because I've taken ownership of what I can control and taking more of a creator mindset versus a victim.
Awesome, thank you. And I think something that stuck out for me in that story is taking ownership for what I can control, right? What is it that I want? How do I go get that? Things that I can't control aside. I appreciate that. Thank you.
This is Jeremy. I have a bid that I wanted to, it was outside of driver's leg. I've been chasing a big check from my previous employer, and it's caused me to get a lot of anxiety over the last month. And I was really, I found myself slipping into that victim role, and I went to yesterday to get this check at any cost. You know, I was going in there being the persecutor, really. And I was just going to, you know, yeah, I was going to strangle somebody. But what I did is, on the way over there, you know, I thought about all these things we've been talking about and practicing, and I tried to really stop and center myself. myself, focus on what I wanted to get out of it, what I really wanted, and the outcome that I wanted. And I went in there with a much different mentality, and was able to just, you know, get the desired outcome, which is get the check and, you know, not strangle anybody and have a really good outcome. So that was, you know, outside of Driver Select, you know, putting that into everyday life, it worked out really well for me. I thought it was a big win.
Nice. Nice.
This is Brandy. I posted my big win at home on the e-journal, which I know was like a lot of information all at once, but it was like such a win just being Karen and I that like I really felt like celebrating it because it could change the whole dynamic of the way we, you know, deal with issues. But I also, that I actually wish Steve was on this call, but here being fit, but Steve, I feel like I had a really big win just minus these relationships in the last like couple weeks with the drama triangle introduction and everything because you know, I've never been the type of person in general to feel persecuted all the time or feel like a victim. You know, I know I've been in that role, but it's never been like something that I've ever really wallowed in. But I have wallowed in it with Steve. You know, he's come up to me a couple times, and where I thought he was the persecutor, and I just decided that that's who he was all the time, always the persecutor. And you know, so I went into every interaction just expecting a persecutor. So I went into every interaction just being the victim already. And it was getting really, really old and really uncomfortable. And I had just looked at, you know, even when he would be coaching me, I thought it was persecuting. You know, there was really, at this point, I realized it was in my head, nothing he could do right. And just like I said, in my head, so much of that was really in my head. I totally recalibrated on it, changed my desire to be a creator, have gone into every meeting with him in the last 2 weeks, or via email or whatever, showing up, hopefully as a creator, and I found a lot of stuff that he was coaching me on to be, you know, true, and I don't know that I really wanted some of that, so, but it feels so much better to be back into a creator role and ready to accept new challenges as opposed to feeling like I've been singled out and persecuted, and it's been just a real change in the last 2 weeks, so I'm really excited about it.
Nice. Thank you for that. Appreciate that. Yeah, sometimes we have to be open to our own, you know, that the drama triangle often gets focused externally in terms of how we interact with people around us or things around us, but sometimes we're in our own role and we're playing it with ourselves, right? We're our own persecutor, we're our own rescuer, we're our own victim. And so...
Definitely, I think we're our
own. Yeah. I appreciate that.
This is Peter. Just a comment on that, I think it's... you can only control what you can control. And, you know, when you show up as a victim, as all of us have before, you will probably interpret things that are, you know, expressed to you as being a persecutor. Instead of, you know, when you show up as a creator, things just kind of come to you and you hear things a little differently. So you may not necessarily be able to control how other people act or what they say, but you can certainly control how you appear, and when you show up as a creator versus a victim, you know, it has a funny way of, you know, you hear things a little bit differently, and you see things as challenges and obstacles that you can overcome instead of things that are happening to you. So, you know, when you focus on what you can control, it makes just a huge difference.
Yeah. I agree. Anybody else? Any other wins?
Hey, guys. Yeah, this is Vance. Just want to share, I mean, I don't know if it's a win quite yet, but just my overall approach on coaching and mentoring has changed. My interstate has changed dramatically over this past week. So much of the time I thought I was entering a situation being a creator, being a challenger, being a coach. Realistically, I was, you know, entering those situations actually being a persecutor, saying, hey, this is what you're not doing, and persecuting somebody on something and saying, you know, like, now let's figure it out. So, you know, and sometimes those are bad situations where, you know, it may have been an issue that surfaced, and, you know, maybe the emotional state wasn't there. So just practicing busy and just trying to really recalibrate and focus on the desired outcome that I want, and be more open to, you know, asking questions, you know, to help be a coach, and to also, you know, utilize Ted. It's helped me quite a bit, you know, on taking a different outlook on the situation, and you know, and really, you know, focusing on myself on how I can, you know, bring people up and challenge them to be a creator as well, instead of me approaching the situations as a persecutor. So, like I said, I haven't seen a whole lot from it yet, but I know it starts with me on changing my mindset, and I have done that, and, you know, I hope to see some huge wins come from it.
Nice. Thank you for that. Anybody else?
Hey, Ruben, so I would say the big win for me is, you know, after experiencing this session a couple weeks ago, is being able to recognize the need to recalibrate, because so often we'll go into situations mentally charged with a negative tone versus a positive tone or an open tone. And this has given me some time to reflect the need to reflect and recalibrate so that I can learn how to approach things a little bit differently. And I liken this to whenever I read Steve's post about how he handle situations at home, and I said to him, I said, it's funny because it seemed like he was writing about things in my house too, knowing that's a common struggle, recalibrating when you deal with things at home, recalibrating when you deal with things at work, versus recalibrating when you need to deal with just people or different situations, and so that you can, you know, gain some of that personal control. My way has been recognizing the need to recalibrate so that I can put the best person forward when I'm dealing with whatever situation I'm dealing with. Now, I've not perfected it yet. I've only perfected or almost perfected the ability to recognize that they need to do that. And I'm working on, you know, putting the best person forward after I recalibrate and coming out of the recalibration piece the right way. So that's been a win for me, the ability to recognize.
Yeah, it starts with that, right? I was actually, I'll give you guys an example of mine. I think I had a win this week as well. I was in a situation where an email was shot off by an outside person from the firm related to matters on the inside of the firm, and they included a bunch of people that really didn't need to be included, and actually kind of did themselves a disservice by actually including all these other people, because they didn't realize I was their big advocate, and I was just triggered. I was completely arrested, right? And the thoughts going through my head at that moment were so out of bounds for what would have been helpful or appropriate for that moment. And I went to Rick, who's the chairman of our firm, and, you know, kind of explained what was happening, because he was CC'd on the email as well, and he happens to be in the same boat as I am. We're both this person's advocate. And, you know, without actually doing anything, all he said was, you know, I think you need to take 3 minutes to just recalibrate and then come back to me, and we'll talk. And that's all he said, right? And it was his ability to recognize I needed to recalibrate, and I kind of deep down inside knew, and I just didn't, I needed an excuse to be mad, right? As opposed to taking a better path to maybe a more creator mindset. But just recognizing, that's the first step. Recognizing, you know what, I'm triggered, I'm arrested, I need to recalibrate before I actually react to something. That's a big first step. You know, the outside of that, for you know, just finish the story, which is outside of that, the next big thing for me was realizing that empathy, getting empathy for a person in a situation that you might want to persecute, is actually a pretty big shift as well for the coaching. How is this person feeling? Why are they feeling that way? How do I actually get into the mindset of understanding how they feel this way before I can actually really coach in a way that's authentic? May not hold true for every situation, but for my situations, it tends to be that I don't have as much empathy as I should for people when I'm about to coach or shift to that coaching mindset. So that was a big one.
Hey, Ruben, we're hearing like almost like a dead battery sound on our call. Is that you? It looks like we're in full.
No, I'm on a landline, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It might be someone dropping in and out, possibly.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about you guys not persecute me? No, I'm just kidding.
We're really, because you were talking about getting angry or something, and then I was like, wow, how angry was he?
That's funny. All right, guys, so we were supposed to cover effective meetings today, and we can cover effective meetings today, but it seems like drama triangle is up for you because almost every single win is about the drama triangle. I'm going to leave it up to you guys. I mean, we'll cover effective meetings next call. I have no problem with that. Do you guys want to go deeper into the drama triangle, or do you want to shift?
Shift.
I'll tell you,
shift
to meetings. Okay. Sounds good. So, you guys let me know when you're ready, and we'll jump into it.
We're good to move forward.
Okay, cool. So, within effective meetings, go ahead.
I just the last thing I'd say, do we need to recalibrate before
mm-hmm.
we go from drama triangle to effective meetings?
No, but I think this next section is going to be less about your wins and more about sort of just peppering with questions about what are some of the components of each of these effective meeting practices. So who can give me the kind of four big bullets of the process or the headings for effective meetings?
Prepare.
Close.
Follow-up.
Prepare, meet, close, follow-up? Yeah. Or prepare, execute, complete, follow-up, right? All the same. So within prepare, out of the sort of major steps for preparation, what do you guys think is the most important? And there's no right answer. I'm just looking for opinions, especially for what's up for you guys.
This is Ramon. I think the most important part of preparing is knowing why you are going to meet. What is the true purpose of the meeting?
Okay. Talk to me a little bit more about why you feel that way.
Well, because if you're going into a meeting with no foundation for the meeting, your mind will go all over the place. It's going to be less effective. You're not going to be able to engage the audience or even tap the desired outcome that you're going in there to get because you won't know what it is. There's no topic, no true agenda. There's nothing to follow, so everything is truly ad hoc. When you don't have the true purpose.
Yep.
Well, Peter, just to follow up on that, I also believe, you know, we all have very busy schedules, so if we're going into a meeting that is not very well prepared, it doesn't have a clear agenda, me personally, I feel like it's a waste of time because there's other things I could be doing that are productive. So. It's a much different mindset when it's very clear about what we're going to accomplish, and then we accomplish that within the set time frame. But when
think about all the other things I could be producing at that point in time. So that's why it's so important to have a very clear understanding of the purpose and what you're going to accomplish, what the outcome will be.
Yep. So you got to think about it as, what's the purpose of this meeting? Why am I actually calling this meeting? What are the steps I need to take, or what are the things I need to discuss within the context of this meeting to accomplish that purpose? And then the last part of that is, who needs to help me get there? Right? So I can certainly appreciate that. Let me get a sense for, how many meetings would you guys say, out of all the meetings you attend, right, scale of 1 to 10, 10 being all of them are completely aligned in terms of purpose, 1 being none of them have a real stated purpose, we happen to just be meeting, 5 is not an option. What number would you attribute to the total number of meetings you guys have that actually have a clearly defined purpose?
8. Yeah, I'd probably say 8 or 9.
Wow, okay, that's great then.
Pretty well defined.
Yeah, I think, I will say this, I think that, you know, what we did before, or I feel maybe it was, and maybe this is just is my perception, was we didn't communicate as well before we went into this advanced execution. So really, we have our one weekly meeting, and everything else was like ad hoc. Like, there was not, like, I didn't have a time that I would sit down with Peter and go, Peter, let's go ahead and talk about some of these things on the website. Or whatever, and then our weekly meeting didn't really feel like it was the time to surface very much at the time, and now all that has changed. Our weekly meeting has become a place to surface things that you need the whole group for, so you have that, which feels like a really great tool now, and then in realizing, like, this can't go into a weekly meeting, I think we're actually holding more meetings than we had before, but they're well, their intention, like realizing that they that can't come up there, but it needs to come up somewhere. So I'm gonna call a regular meeting with Peter or Ramon, and then like I have a couple of them that dropped off. Like we realized we didn't need that structured meeting anymore. We could just inform in the main. So I think like we didn't really have a lot of meetings before that were structured that nothing held a point, but it's just the one main meeting that didn't feel like the place where I think we've gotten way better at it, and it feels like we've kind of started fresh. Like now no one calls a meeting. I have not been called into a meeting where I was like, why am I here? One time. So.
Okay.
That's been really helpful with taking this class.
Okay. Same question for this concept of preparing attendees and really sending out agendas 24 hours in advance, or rather in advance, right? We'll start with just in advance before we go into the 24-hour optimization, but scale of 1 to 10, how many meetings would you say do you get an agenda, or you know what you're going to be talking about prior to showing up into that meeting?
I think that's pretty high up too.
Yeah,
probably
at least 7 or 8.
I mean,
that's great. No, I mean, I think that like what I'm really trying to get at here is understanding how well do you guys feel internally you prepare for meetings, and what are the areas you can work on over the next quarter, just as an area to dig into, right? So if you guys feel like you're actually preparing pretty well for meetings, that's a great thing, because most of the time you don't actually get. I don't usually get that type of feedback from executive teams, and in particular, agendas being sent out in advance is a really tough one because we are so busy and there are a lot of things going on. It's really hard to prepare in advance for these meetings in the way that we would like to, right?
I think,
Rupe, it's Jeff. I think my observation would be that I think we're getting much better at having agendas before and information before, but I think all of this, me included, have got to do we can still got room for improvement in as a participant, are we prepared? As some of the owner of these meetings, I still feel, you know, the information went out beforehand, but everybody being busy lives, the preparation of the participants could be deeper. And the same applies to me when I'm a participant in meetings. Have I truly prepared and really gone through the material and really thought about the issues at hand.
Nice. Okay, so that's an interesting perspective. Want to throw it out to the broader team. How do you sort of, how does that strike you?
I agree with that.
Rufus, Jeremy, I think it's a pretty fair assessment. At least for myself, often, you know, knowing what the meeting's about, knowing who's going to be there, but taking the time to really prepare myself so that I can be an active participant. One, it's challenging because I'm new here and I'm still, you know, trying to learn what's going on. But the I think it is important to say, you know, it's just as important as what we're meeting about, getting that information out to tell people how you can prepare and what we need to accomplish prior to the meeting is vital. And I think that's somewhere we could all probably do, like Jeff said, some improvement on.
Hmm. That's great. I appreciate that perspective, Jeremy and Jeff, frankly. Okay, so one of the things that Stephen mentioned in his post was specifically knowing when to, and drawing this kind of fine line between when to call an ad hoc or when to defer it into a structural meeting. Do you guys have a similar sense or a similar experience?
I need to, you know, I need you to, you know, what do you think? Hold on, I haven't even thought of, you know, my brain is on something completely different, and I'm busy, you know, and so I think that you know, we might phone people and say, oh, you know, I might phone Peter and say, hey, look, I've noticed this and this in pricing, you know, and you know, you're really expecting the person to recalibrate and orientate their mind to this complex subject in an instant, you know, whereas what we should be, you know, and that may not need a structured meeting so much as us just being aware of that to say, you know, maybe that's where an email is better, to say, hey, look, I've noticed this, can you, you know, really think about that, and then let you and I discuss it in this form, you know, tomorrow or later today or whatever, and then form almost as, you know, a structured, it's a structured meeting approach to a follow-up. But I think I do witness it occurring several times where, you know, complex issues are laid, and we all do it to each other, that we lay it on each other and expecting a, you know, a sensible, articulate, well thought through response in a heartbeat, you know, and that's probably don't do any of us a good service.
Yeah, absolutely, right? So there's two parties to that, right? Because I think there's people around here that sometimes do it and they couch it in, hey, let me ask you a quick question. It's never a quick question. It's always fairly complicated. But it's up for them immediately, right? And so part of it is having the discipline not to ask, not just to pick up the phone and maybe putting it on a dynamic agenda if possible. And the other part is me having the discipline to basically say, you know, I appreciate that question. I'm working on some other stuff right now. Can we push it to the structural meeting? Let's just add it. Or can I get to it later, right? And actually helping hold the energy for them, because otherwise it becomes pretty easy to disrupt my time, right? So that's an interesting point. I like that.
Yeah, the two-minute discussion invariably becomes the 35, 40-minute discussion, as you say, Rupert.
Yep.
You know, it's just a quick question. Yeah.
Excellent. So jumping over to the next set of, you know, the next step in the process, which is actually meet or execute, right? There's a handful of things within this particular bucket, one of which you guys joked about earlier, which was start and end on time. And in my experience, humor within executive teams is also a way to sort of diffuse points of contention or points, pain points. So is there any truth to the start and end on time, or have you guys held that discipline pretty well?
You know, for me, from my observation, I think that, you know, our primary meeting being Tuesday, 7:30, and even this one, we tend to really do get moving forward on time. You know, and I think everyone understands the importance of, you know, showing up on time and being prepared. So I think we do pretty well with that. We actually do really well with following the ground rules for the most part as well. Now, sometimes we do veer off track on a topic, but Jeff, who basically is the facilitator of the meeting, he owns the meeting, he quickly gets us back on track. You know, he'll give the appropriate time, then he redirects, because I think he's looking to see where it's going to go, and if it doesn't add value, he'll quickly bring us back on track. So I think we do really, really well with, you know, the step two in the process. Just my assessment.
Okay. I can appreciate that. Setting ground rules, you guys have already been through an exercise. One of the things you mentioned in Q1 was, hey, as an executive team, pretty good at keeping ground rules, pretty good at holding them. When we had to actually apply it out to the broader team, a little bit more difficult, a little less disciplined on that practice. I'm just checking in, and again, this is to set the basis for just reflecting back on what you guys say and what you might want to work on to the next quarter, right? How are ground rules working for you in the broader group, not in the context of the executive team?
It's Jeremy. I just wanted to throw something in here just from my perception and again being here in the company. And I think the idea of using the ground rules is great. Getting that set before the meeting really helps people focus on what we should not be doing during the meeting. But I think that sometimes we may get used to just going over those rules, but we're not doing as good a job as we could holding ourselves and each other accountable to those rules. Often we, I don't think we really speak concisely when, sometimes we'll spend more time talking about something and adding a whole bunch of extra dialogue. And I think that's something like individually we could work on, but also, I'm not sure that we really get everything on the table. And I just wanted to throw that out to the group and see kind of what they thought, how you guys feel about that.
Yeah, this is Peter. I absolutely agree. An example was yesterday. There was an issue that one of our buyers, Lear, wanted to discuss, and seemed like it could have been a little messy, so we ended up parking it, but that probably would have been a situation where it was most convenient for him to be able to express those views because of the fact that the rest of the week he's going to be busy buying. So there's really no other venue for him to discuss some of these topics. So I do think, I agree there. I think we have to hold each other accountable. If there is an issue that's messy and this is the only forum to discuss it, we have to discuss it then. Otherwise, we're just going to end up spending more time setting up other meetings that'll take production time away from other things. So you really need to spend that time taking care of the issues that are most pertinent at that time.
To add to Peter and Brady, and to Jeremy's observation, I think I brought this up in two of our all-day things, and that is, we are getting better. There has been progress, but this is still a very no-conflict, no one wants to rock the boat type thing, and, so it shouldn't be messy, but there's always a way to stay on topic, so you've got these competing commitments, so to speak, where it's like, okay, well, this probably does need to be said. It's like, oh, well, we've got to finish this meeting with a hard stop. So I think no one wants to, there's still, an era of not always saying what all might need to be said, and then the competing thing of, do we want to get into this in our one big weekly meeting, like Peter said, that is the only time that some people, have to voice stuff like that.
So, yeah. It's really interesting, right? So, A, I appreciate Jeremy bringing up this perspective, especially as someone who's new to the organization. I think it's a fresh set of eyes that, sometimes maybe is helpful, right? But one of the things you guys are highlighting is, okay, and I'm just going to play back and tell me if I've got this wrong, because I don't want to get it wrong, and I simply want to mirror back what I heard, which is, we have ground rules. We don't necessarily always practically use them. One way in which we don't practically use them is oftentimes we hold back things that we quote-unquote need to say, that need to be said in the moment, that we don't want to say because it'll move us in a different direction, or it'll be a distraction, or it'll take too long to talk about, and therefore we just don't say it. Did I hear that correctly?
You don't matter.
Okay. So what does that say about the nature in which we actually engage in conflict as an executive team? One, and I don't have an answer, there's no right or wrong, but it's something for you guys to think about, is if we're not saying the things that we need to say to one another in the meeting that we're at because we don't want to move off agenda, but they are deemed important, how do we better engage in conflict? Or or how do we actually engage in conflict? When does this stuff get processed? Because energy is energy, right? It's got to go somewhere. If you're holding it in, it's going to come out somewhere else. So where does it come out if you're not dealing with it there? And then two is, with respect to what's important and what aids the situation, right? Is every comment that needs to be said actually helping progress the team? Or what criteria are we actually using to determine what needs to be said, right? And some of this is, I have an opinion on sometimes what I need to say, and I know that if I just stopped and thought about it, it helps zero people when I say it. That's different than it needs to be said because you need to hear it, because you're not hearing it, and it's having an impact on our collective goals, right? I don't have answers here, but these are just things I'm hearing, and I'm reflecting it back. This is fodder for a future discussion. Any reactions to that?
I think also, Ruth, it raises the question of when is the right time to raise certain issues? Is it in a group meeting? Sometimes, again, my observation is somebody may surface something which actually should not have been stored up and waited for our Tuesday meeting. It should have been brought out, you know, before. There was no need to wait because it was an issue that needed, you know, we should have put some attention to before the meeting, or in fact could have even more easily been resolved or addressed outside the meeting. So I think there's what is the right forum, and is it, you know, too often I think things are stored up. Oh, there's a weekly meeting, therefore I need to hold off and wait and hold everything up for that moment, as opposed to getting it surfaced and addressed beforehand. And or maybe even if you think it's appropriate, replying and saying, hey, look, I think this is an agenda item or something that I want to surface at the weekly meetings. Is this appropriate? And getting it on the agenda in a more formal way.
I agree. I think that that's a really important designation, that as an executive team, you guys are going to have to, you know, sort of continue to work on, not because you don't have a skill set in place, but because all executive teams need to continue to work on it. It's an ongoing practice. When do I surface the right thing at the right time and how, right? What's going to be most useful for our collective goals? What's going to be, what's going to give this issue the best chance of getting resolved if there's a resolution that's needed? Does it need to be, you know, elevated now? Does it need to be deferred? Is it a one-on-one first to pre-wire people? Is it just a big group discussion? I mean, some of the tools we went over at the end of Q2 didactic, right, a couple weeks ago, will start to speak towards this, but I think what you guys are intuiting and what you know, you're starting to sense is that we've got to find a way to do it right to help our collective goals, right? That's a good, I mean, guys, this is good stuff. I appreciate, you know, sort of leaning into what is otherwise sometimes uncomfortable. The next sort of bullet on execute is assign roles. Do you guys, I mean, a lot of firms that I work with don't necessarily assign roles to people in terms of who has to keep time, who has to keep notes, etc. Do you guys utilize this tool? So the person who generally called the meeting or sort of owns the meeting, right?
Yeah, we have Jeff as our facilitator.
Nice.
Which, can I be really honest to you? One thing that sucks, Jeff, when you're on the phone, is with you as facilitator, is that we don't, I think that there's the other roles you can play in the meeting are just being in the meeting would be really valuable. For the kind of insight that you have, and I know that you still bring it, but as a facilitator, we miss out from having you as a participant as much in the meeting, I think. I don't know how I really differentiate the two, but there is a difference between the person facilitating and the complete people who are just active participants. And I think you do a great job as a facilitator. I just wish sometimes that yeah, you just have to facilitate, you know.
Oh, trust me, there's many times I wish I didn't have to facilitate. But no, I can assure you from a part, generally speaking, my recommendation would be if you call a meeting and you know you really have got to be a major contributor on an item, it's not generally a good thing to be the facilitator. In regard to the weekly meetings, I don't personally feel restricted in any way on the contribution I make, mainly because, you know, on the KPIs and particular initiatives, I don't own any of them, which is a good thing. But generally speaking, I would say that you know, if you're calling a meeting, for instance, and you know, let's say it was on the website, Brandy, and you're a major contributor on that, it might be a good idea to have somebody else facilitate and manage the meeting, because you're obviously, by definition, going to be busy thinking about, you know, you're participating in the subject matter.
Yeah, definitely. I didn't even think about the whole KPI thing. I think it's more when things start to get messy, or maybe things, you know, you have to be the facilitator as opposed to being a, I think for the, if the meeting were done exactly as planned every time, it's great that you're the facilitator, but, you know. Anyway, I'm noticing, thanks for just going what you're talking about, and it's being a facilitator and being really in the meeting, if you have to be our
Well, it may be in the future a good idea, because I certainly would relish the opportunity to let others facilitate a meeting, and it may actually be good practice for some of the team members, you know, some of you guys, to say, okay, you know, you know, 1 week you facilitate it, and that would be a fantastic thing, maybe something that we consider in the future.
Taking turns and have to prepare for the weekly meeting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that would be really cool.
It's a great idea.
Eric will be the first to take the lead.
Yeah, we volunteer Eric.
Nice. Eric, I'm expecting a post.
And I do really like that idea. Well, it's first because it's such a great one to practice on, because it's got so much, it's got things that are really set, but Jeff has said, like, Jeff does the agenda out 24 hours ahead of time. Jeff does tell us what we're kind of going to, you know, focus on and all that. So it's like such a great rhythm meeting for someone to practice on, because you've seen the way it's done well. So.
Yeah. And, right, I mean, we learn by doing sometimes, right? We got to skin our knees a little bit, and we've got to carry the water and all of that. So to the extent that you can get rhythm and practice in facilitating in that way with a great coach, right? So we tie this back to the drama triangle. Jeff becomes coach, and you guys become creators of this meeting, and it can be a very, very healthy cycle of developing a skill set that, to the extent the executive team feels like they need it, to develop. So, continuing on with the execution practices, and by the way, I recognize we're only about 10 minutes out from our hour. We'll continue on these topics. It's a meaty subject. I think it's useful, and I think it has impact, so we'll dedicate as much time as you guys feel necessary for this, right? So, some of these on the next sort of page of the supplement, right, kind of go between interior, exterior, staying on track versus check-in opportunities. And so we'll collectively kind of handle them together, but check-in opportunities, problem-solving versus informing, we took care of last quarter, but I'm curious about a check-in on that. Staying on track, which is parking lots, open loops, things of that nature. Encouraging full participation, which requires you to be aware of when people aren't participating or why they're not participating or who has an opinion, they're simply not saying it. And then ending the topic with discussion, you know, or the discussions with actions or decisions, right? So if we were really practicing these ground rules, one of the things I would have done at the end of the discussion that just happened was, great, Jeff made a suggestion that perhaps someone on the executive team needs to start actually planning, or we take turns planning it. what decision, it sounds like a decision we made, do we all agree or not, and when is the first action item on that decision, right? But any of those practices that I've listed out, does that any of them strike a chord with you, the things that you guys are either noticing are a strength of the organization, possibly a weakness of the organization?
This is Jeremy. I think we do a really good job staying on track for the most part. You can always improve on that. But I think there are times when we need to recognize when it needs to be, you know, sent to the parking lot, or it really needs to be something we're going to come back to and resolve, or maybe even take it outside of the meeting. And I think it all has to do with everybody being in that creator mindset. It's like, you know, what's my role in the meeting? How am I going to participate? How am I going to make this better? And how am I going to accomplish what we're all here to do in the most efficient amount of time? You know, and everybody being in that conscious mindset, saying, okay, I'm not going to get my feelings hurt because we can't finish this discussion right now, or I'm not going to get turned into a victim, but I'm going to, you know, do my best to get this meeting successfully accomplished and completed.
Okay. Anybody else? All right. Moving on to sort of how we close meetings. How often do you guys end meetings with just sort of a full review of who's doing what and why? Standard practice for you guys, not standard practice?
It is, Luke, this is Ramon. It is a standard practice, that every time that we speak to our actions and our committed actions for next week, Jeff, you know, facilitating the meeting, he'll confirm what our committed action is, or he'll remind us if we move past without giving that committed action of, okay, this is what you committed to, even so much as to, once the meeting is concluded, his follow-up is impeccable in terms of recapping what the meeting is and sending out our committed actions so we can keep those in front of the mind so that we can start focusing on what we committed to do. So it's a very standard practice for us on the executive level. Now, I don't know how it's playing out in our individual structural meetings. Are we capturing it and then giving the appropriate follow-up, or taking it as serious as we take it at the executive level? But as far as our Tuesday meeting, it happens flawlessly.
Okay. That's a good perspective. And what I'm gathering is that at the executive team level, Jeff is killing it in terms of facilitating and running it, which is a great compliment to Jeff and you guys in terms of how you're approaching it. One thing I'll caution you.
I think they're overselling significantly. Yeah, I wish it was as good as they're painting, quite frankly.
But you know, one of the things I'll caution you guys, right, is that you're holding a great space for the executive team. Everybody's bringing their best self to that, and then we're kind of unclear about how it actually gets implemented a layer down, right? And if you continue to do that, what you might inadvertently create is a bigger gap between the next layer of management that needs to be able to continue to step up and do more and more. That's on your plate currently as an executive team, so you have more time and leverage to go do other things that progress the organization. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So, if Jeff is great at reviewing all the action items and really working through that, but we're not really sure how that plays out in our individual structural meetings, which, it may or may not be great, who knows, right? You guys have individual senses of that, but maybe not a collective sense. Then you got to figure out how to now model that behavior for your team so they can see it and then slowly take on more. Just like we made the suggestion that each of you should take a turn sort of prepping and planning and facilitating the executive team meeting. Your next level needs to actually start doing that for your own individual rhythms that you lead. Does that make sense on how we create organizational leverage that way?
Yeah.
Okay. That was like a half-hearted yes. That was like a, yeah, I get it, but whatever. That's just the felt sense I get through the phone, which I, you know, admit is not a great sense for picking up how people are really feeling. So, but I'll leave that on the table for a future conversation. We've got about 3 minutes, and I just want to sort of, we'll revisit and we'll restart again on complete or sort of end meetings as part of this effective practice. Any quick takeaways for you guys?
Hey, Rupert, it's Jeff. One last thought, and it's something that Eric and I have been working on now for just over a week, which is really the sort of trying to establish really disciplined sort of daily rhythms. And it strikes me that a lot of the techniques, if we want to call it, and the disciplines of structured meetings and all the things we've talked about are really, and it's something that I invite Eric and Doug and the team to think about, and Vance, that these disciplines and these techniques are really applicable to all of us when we need to establish, you know, disciplined daily rhythms in running what I call the production departments like recon and sales. And I think there is a high correlation between those two needs, you know. So that would just be an observation on my part.
Okay. Thank you for that. Any group takeaways?
I was going to say that the comment that Jeff made and you made about being wary of the, I just got a quick question. I think that's common, because it really does matter, like, what kind of question you're posing to somebody right then. That was kind of impactful to me, just because I get caught in those a lot. Like, people just come around and they're like, hey, Brandon, quick question. And it's like, so what about our benefits? You know, it's like some crazy question that maybe I don't even have anything to do with or whatever, but I've got to get more and more disciplined at being the victim in ad hoc meetings happening to me, because I'm not very... I'm not very good at telling people no sometimes, so.
Okay. Yeah, and it's just internal look at our external relationships, right? So, I get that. And I thought that the quick question nugget was a great insight. Anybody else? Okay. Well, we're at our hour, guys. I appreciate the engagement. Appreciate the discussion. Jay's going to be following up with coaching next week, I believe. So.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks,
appreciate it. Have a great day.
Bye.
See you.